Okay, we begin here on the top of Yud-Tet Amud Aleph, six lines down. Boy Reish Lakish, Mau Shime'eid Adam Livno Akatan. Can Yehud be established with a person's minor child? The idea being that since this Amah Ivriya was purchased from the father to the Adon, and then the Adon has an option now what to do with this Amah Ivriya, one of those options is to perform Yehud with her, meaning to marry her. Another option is to marry her off to his son. So maybe, and that's the question of Reish Lakish, maybe this goes against the normal policies or mechanisms of Kiddushin, because it doesn't function like normal Kiddushin. Instead of it being an agreement or a transaction between a man and a woman, over here, the individual is going to the father, it turned out to be a purchase transaction, and then we're converting the purchase transaction into Kiddushin. So maybe that can overcome the deficit of the fact that his child is a minor. Standalone, his child is a minor, cannot be Mekadesh and Isha, because he doesn't have the dat. He's not old enough to generate Kiddushin by himself. But over here, where there's another individual who generates the Kiddushin, which is the father, and because of his relationship with the other father who sold the Amai Vriya to him, maybe that deficit can be overcome because the Kiddushin were generated, in a sense, by his father. And so therefore, he could create Yehud or Kiddushin for his son, who is a minor, akin to, somewhat to Yibum, where the Torah already gives you a certain amount of relationship between the parties, and then all you need to do is consummate that relationship. Same thing here, maybe, that the Torah already prescribes different mechanisms to the Amah Ivriya, including Yehud for the child. And maybe that child can even be a minor child. That's the basis of Reish Lakish's question. So he says, "Beno Amar Achmana, Beno Kol Duhu." When it says that he has the option to create Yehud with the child, which is Im Livno Yiadena Kimishpata Benot Yasela. So maybe that Beno means any child, any son. Odilma Beno Dumya Didide. Or maybe when it says that his child can have Yehud, then that's the other possibility, which is Imra'a b'nei Adah, Asher lo Ya'adah. I mean that the possibility of the Yehud being for the Adon, the father, or the possibility of being the son. Maybe there's some sort of parallel between the father and the son. Just like the father is of age, then certainly the son should be of age. So Mahu Gadol, Av b'no Gadol. So Amra b'zeira tashma. We'll get it from this limud. Ish prat l'katan. The Ish is written in the Parshat Arayot, and there it says that it has to be a man to the exclusion of a minor. Asher yinaf et eshet Ish. So it's one who has adultery with his friend's wife. Prat le eshet katan. That comes to exclude the wife of a katan. So over here you have an exclusion on the Pasuk from both perspectives. Both from the perspective of the individual perpetrating the crime, the adultery, that he has to be of age and not a katan. As well as the fact that the only way that there is adultery is if the woman is married to an ish, is married to someone who is of age, not if she's married to a minor. So those are the two exclusions that come out of the pasuk. Obviously one that's relevant to us is the fact that you have a katan who is married to a woman over here. How is this katan married to the woman? And why is the Torah coming to exclude that case? Iyamart miyaid. If you tell me that the Adon can have his son, the minor, marry this woman, imkei matzinu ishut the katan, then we find that there is the possibility of generating marriage with a katan. So therefore, that seems wrong, because then you do have eshet ish with a katan. The pasuk says, no go with eshet ish of a katan. There is no problem with the eshet a katan. And if here you have real ishut, you have real marriage, then why isn't there a problem? If Yehud works with the son, then they're fully married, and there should be a problem. Velamai. So what do you want to suggest here? Enu miyaid. So that Yehud doesn't work? Amai kamamait lekra. Then what is the pasuk coming to teach you? Why do you need a pasuk to tell me that a minor cannot generate kiddushin with a woman? That is obvious. He is not of age. He does not have dat. So how can he generate the kinyan that's required, or the relationship that is required to generate the kiddushin over here? I don't need a pasuk to come to tell me that a minor that is married to a woman is not really married. If he's not married, then there's no issue of eshet ish. Pasuk comes and specifically tells you that, that means that there must be some manifestation of marriage with a katan, despite that manifestation, it's not problematic here. It will not be subject to the rules of Eish Yidish. So, tifshut mina, dimiyayit. Actually, you should conclude just the opposite. That yeyud works with a minor child, and that's why the Torah had to come and specifically exclude the case of a minor child. That same question could be asked on the first part of the pasuk, ish prat l'katan. Says there that a man to the exclusion of a minor. So why do I need you to come and tell me that he's not chayav in this case? If he's a katan, obviously a katan is patur mina unshin. So why would you have any havamin over here that the ish himself should be subject to the rules? He's like any other case in the Torah. Tosafot suggests over here, v'afal gav de katan lav bar unshin, even though a katan is not a punishable offender, nevertheless, mikol makom itzur kvali mute. I still need a pasuk to exclude him. Because the woman who perpetrates the act with this child, as long as he's over the age of 9 years and 1 day, whereas bia is considered to be bia, the other party, the woman, if she's of age, will be punished for that act. And so maybe we would have thought that he'd be swept up in that equation, which is that since the woman's going to be put to death, then maybe he should be put to death as well, even though he's a minor. So that's how Tosafot deals with the issue of as to why we need a pasuk to exclude a minor. Well, otherwise, why would you even think that he's chayav? The answer being that his partner is going to be put to death if she is of age. So maybe he should be subject to the same rules. Other Rishonim say that it's coming to exclude a child below the age of 9 years and 1 day. That biato eno bi'ah. Meaning that since his bi'ah is not a functional bi'ah below the age of 9, therefore it's prat l'katan over here means that that's not even considered to be bi'ah, or that's not even someone who's in the parshiyah of arayot, and that's what it means, ish prat l'katan. Whereas a katan, 9 years and 1 day, and older, would be a bi'ah, and therefore he would impact the other party. Which is, some of the Rishonim suggest, but maybe that's where, to make him patur min onshin means, majority, either like the Bali Tosafot over here, that say maybe he's swept up with the other party, or coming to teach you that below the age of 9 years and 1 day is bi'ah, it's not bi'ah, it's not considered to be an ish at all. Since it's not considered to be an ish, even his co-conspirator would not be put to death. Alright, so Amar Ravashi. So Ravashi suggests that the pasuk is not speaking about Ye'ud, but rather about Yibum. Hacha b'yavam ben teisha shanim b'yom echad. Here we're dealing with a youngster who consummated a marriage with his Yavam. How could he consummate a marriage with his Yavam? Because Yibum only requires Bi'ah. That's the only thing required min haTorah to generate the consummation of such a marriage. And since a child, 9 years and 1 day and older, has a Bi'ah, then maybe he can generate the Yishut that way. Dimi d'oraita chazile. So since midoraita, it works, seemingly, that's what Rashi says. Klomar, zkuka lo b'oto bi'ah d'chol davar. That this consummates the marriage completely. V'kan ala yorsha. And she becomes his wife fully. So Rashi reads chazile, meaning literally, the bi'ah works, and they are married. So ma'u d'teima, kevin d'midoraita chazile, u'bi'ato bi'ah. Because since min haTorah, the Torah placed this woman into his possession, because of the zika, and the bi'ah that he has over the age of 9 is bi'ah, habala mitchayev beishadish. I would have think then, since she's a full-fledged wife to this katan, then someone who has an adulterous affair with this woman would be subject to the punishment of eishadish. Kamash malon, that doesn't work. Meaning that, even though, technically, according to Rashi, they're married midoraita, they're still not subject to the rules of adultery, because it says ish, or eshet ish, which means prat le katan, or prat le eshet katan, and over here she's eshet katan. So here we have, according to Rashi, a generation of a marriage midoraita. Since you generated a marriage midoraita, so you need a pasuk to tell you that that marriage is not subject to the rules of ni'uf, of adultery. Tosafot questions Rashi's position from the Gemara in Yevamot, where the Gemara in Yevamot says, Biyat Katan with the Yevama only works midrabanan. Meaning there, the Gemara in Yevamot equates Biyat Ben Teisha V'Yom Echad L'Ma'amar. Mamar is clearly a vehicle, the Rabbanan, or Kiddushin, the Rabbanan, for a Yivama. And there the Gemara says that his Bia has the same status as Mamar, which is that it ruins it for the other brothers, so that the other brothers are now precluded from performing Yibum if he has Bia with this woman, but not that it acquires her to him, Midoraita. Tosfot in the end says, V'nechein Nirali, he thinks the word Chazialei does not mean, like Rashi says, that she is married Midoraita, but rather, Yili Doraita Chazialei Ba'alma, mean that in general, Kagon Shaya Yavam Gadol, had he been a Gadol, it would have worked. V'katan Zeh Biyato Biyah, and since this Katan's Biyah is a Biyah, therefore I would have thought, Havamina, Midoraita Chashuva Kiyishto, I would have thought that it works to make him into a full-fledged wife. Kamash Malan, what does the pasuk teach you by Niyuf? That she's not a real wife. So as opposed to Rashi, who says they are married, Midoraita, and the pasuk comes to say, despite their marriage, Doraita, there's no chiyuv of adultery, the way that Tosfot learns it, you would have thought they're married, Doraita. The pasuk by Niyuf tells you that they are not married. That's why you're not culpable for an adulterous affair with this woman, because the pasuk tells you that that's not niyuf. If it tells you it's not niyuf, that tells you they're not married. So Rashi, as opposed to saying, yes, they're married, but there's no punishment, Tosfot sees the fact that there's no punishment shows you they're not married. And that's the Kamash Malan of Tosafot. In defense of Rashi, you could argue that the marriage went through Doraita, that the Bia is Doraita. And what the Rabbonin did was make it Ois Bia, or Ois marriage, Mi Doraita. That Mi Doraita, technically Bia works by Yivama. And therefore, the Yavam over here, when he's 9 years old and one day and older, when he has Bia with the woman, the Yibum is consummated. The Rabbanan came along and said, nah, not full marriage. That's just enough to create Mamar. We're not going to allow this to become a marriage Doraita. And then you have the same structure as what Rashi's saying, but that can be reconciled then with the Gemarot that call Bia Mamar. Because then the Rabbanan is working the opposite direction. It's not what created the connection. It's what's undoing the connection between them. Because then on the right level, they are married. So my Havi Allah. So what's the answer? So because we now explain the Pasuk differently, we don't need Yehud to explain the Pasuk about Niyuf. We don't know the answer to Rish Lakish's question. Does Yehud work with the Katan or does it not work with the Katan? Tashma. Amar Rabbi Aibo, Amar Rabbi Anai. En Yehud Ela Begadol. En Yehud Ela Midat. Yehud only works with someone who is of age. It also only works Midat, with the knowledge, the acquiescence of the party. Tarte. Now Rashi over here learns Tarte, that these items are, one could have been learnt from the other. Which means that, ha-chadu, these are one. Not that they're two, but really one. Which is that it's one item that splits into two. Kevin de'eud elamidat. Since you can only generate de'eud midat with active intent, pshita de'en de'eud elamigado. If you require intent, if you require dat, by definition, you require someone who is of age. So Tarte, according to Rashi, is not two, but one. You're saying the same thing. If you're saying gadol and dat, the two are synonymous. A katan lacks dat. They're not bnei deah. That's the failure in cheresh, shotev, and katan, is that they lack deah. So here you have somebody saying you need dat, and you need gadol. You're saying the same thing twice. That's the way Rashi reads it. Tosafot does not like that explanation. Therefore, Rabbeinu Elchanan perish tarte klomar desatran hadadi, that they actually are mutually exclusive. The reishit amrinin en yehud ela begadol mashma afilu shelo midat. The fact that you require that it says that yehud is only by gadol seems to say that there's no requirement of dat. It's simply that you need age. Age is the only thing that matters. Then you say en yehud ela midat makes it sound like midat works, shelo midat doesn't work. So it sounds like you have two different qualifications of it. Either as gadol, irrespective of the dat, or then you have dat, seemingly, according to some, even irrespective of the age. And that's why you have mutually exclusive terms here, because there's a possibility you can have dat without age. There's a possibility you can have age without dat. So the fact that you have these two, which are seemingly contradictory statements, how do you reconcile between these two statements? So ma tam kamar. It says, no, it's saying, what is the reason? Matam Yehud en Yehud ela begadol. What's the reason that there is no Yehud except with a person of age? Fish en Yehud ela midat. So here we connect between the two. So for Rashi and Ochanami, they were one. And that's what the answer is. It was one, which is that the reason you need gadol is because you also need dat. According to the Tosafot, it's no longer a contradictory statement because they lead into each other. We require a gadol because there's only yehud midat. And so therefore it's not that the dat is as opposed to gadol, it's rather dat is the definition or synonymous with gadol. Vi ba'itema, my midat. Some explain that the dat is not referencing to the man, ela midat didah. It's referencing the woman. Then you solve your problem because now one statement is about the man, must be a gadol. The other statement is about the woman, that she has to be me, dat. The Tani Abayi braid the Rabbi Abo. Asher lo ye'ada. That it says that he did not marry her. Milameid, shetarich le'yada. That means that he has to, yada, marry her. Now, obviously he doesn't have to marry her. Hutani la vu'amar la. Bikidushe yehud. He brought the braita down, and then he explained it. That here we're talking about kidushe yehud. Valiba de Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda. So what does it mean that you need to be mi'aid her? Mi'aid is a choice. It's like kiddushin. He can choose to marry her, he can choose not to marry her. What does it mean that he has to give her ye'ud? So here we're translating, we'll see in a second, that the word ye'ud means some sort of information or acquiescence from the woman. And that's what Abai explains now. So here we're speaking about where he chooses to do kiddushi ye'ud, according to Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda. Da'amar ma'ot arishonot lav lekidushin nitnu. The original monies were not given for kiddushin. So we saw this yesterday, which is that there are two ways to generate ye'ud, which is the marrying of the ama ivriya. One way to do it, one way to formulate it, is to say that the monies originally given as the purchase price get converted into the kesef kiddushin, and they're married with that kesef kiddushin. The other possibility is the ama ivriya has an obligation to work for the remainder of the term that she's with her master. If he waives that right, he's now given her consideration, which is the forgiveness of her obligation to work. That is the consideration by which they are married. That's the kesef kiddushin. So now what we're saying is, Abayi is saying is, this is according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the ma'ot rishonot, the original purchase price, is not what generates the yehud, but rather the yehud is generated while she is working for the adon in the forgiveness of the remainder. So that's why she needs to know about it, because the consideration is generated by the forgiveness of the obligation. So if it had been the kesef kiddushin originally, then why do you need her acknowledgement? The money was given to the father, just like kiddushin can be given to the father without her da'at. So until you can have the purchase price be converted into kesef kiddushin, and what should it have to do with her at all? On the other hand, if it has to do with the forgiveness of the remainder of her obligation, that's what creates the consideration, then you need her to be a party to that. Because it's the forgiveness itself that generates the kesef kiddushin. And that's what Abayi suggests over here. What does it mean that sarich liyada? You have to make known to her, you have to make her aware of the fact that the forgiveness is generating hana'ah, that hana'ah, or that consideration is what they are getting married with. Nachum bar Yitzchak, who we've seen also on yesterday's daf, amar afilu teima lekiddushin itnu. Even if you think that the original monies were given as the kesef kiddushin, shani hacha. Tama Rahmana, Yada. That over here the pasuk says Yada, meaning that there's a demand that you make the girl aware of the fact that you are being miyaeder. That's the Torah's requirement, or the Gzeirat HaKatuv over here, that the Yehud be done in such a manner. My Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. Alright, we've discussed this already the second, third time we brought up Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. Gemara says, okay, what is this Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda that we're talking about? Titania. Yada vehevda. The pasuk says, it's a somewhat difficult puzzle to read. Imra'a b'enei adunah. If he's not pleased with her, asher lo ye'ada. Again, there the ktiv lo is lamed aleph, that he doesn't marry her. Asher lo ye'ada is written, the kri is lamed vav, which means that he does marry her. Ve'evda, and she is redeemed. So we learn from there, the way that Chazal look at it is, yada, yehud is an option for the adon, or giron kesef is an option for the amarviyah to get out. So it says, Ya'ada ve'evda. Tzarich she'ei sha'ut b'yom k'dei b'diyah. What we learn from this is, you have to have a time remaining in her enslavement servitude in order to generate the Ye'ud. Mikan amar Rabbi Yossi b'yudei, m'yei sha'ut b'yom k'dei la'asot imo shaveh pruta. She has a shaveh pruta worth of work left, mikudeshet. B'im lav, enu mikudeshet. Otherwise, she's not married. Alma, what is the conclusion from this statement? Kasavar, he must hold, Ma'ot arishonot lav lekiddushin nitnu. The original monies were not, the purchase price was not the kesef kiddushin. Therefore, you need consideration on the level of a pruta to generate the marriage here. The only way you can do that is if she has a pruta worth of work left that you are forgiving. Then you generate consideration at the level of a pruta. That means that if there's not a pruta left of work that she owes him, he can't generate kiddushin. So that's the way that we've been interpreting Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda until now, which is that it's not the purchase price that creates the kiddushin, but rather the forgiveness of the work. And every time, Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak comes along and says no, that even Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda holds that the original kesef is the kesef kiddushin. And each time he explains the position or how to read the position in that circumstance. And once again here, he says the same thing. Nachum Bar Yitzchak Amar, afilu teimu the kiddushin nitnu. Even if you say the original purchase price was for kiddushin, Shani Ocha, Rachmana, Vehevda. The pasuk connects between Yehud and Hefda to teach you that Yehud only works when there's Hefda, there's a redemption level left. There's a redemption level of significance, which is a pruta left. And that's Gzeret HaKatuv. Not because the forgiveness of the work generates the consideration, but simply the pasuk says, unless she still has a pruta's worth of servitude left, there is no kiddushin. Even though the kiddushin is generated by the original purchase price, which means retroactively, the monies that were given were the kiddushin, and it shouldn't matter where she is in her work schedule. She could even be done, and retroactively, you could use the kesef kiddushin, or she could be in the last minute of work. But the gzeret hakatuv is, ashelo yada vehefta, that you have to have enough pidyon left in there in order to generate yehud. Right, so that is the machloket here. That machloket will also have different meanings in the Yehud that we're speaking about here. Over here we said that you have to give notice to the woman in order to marry her, the Yehud. Again, if we started out with Reish Lakish today, who thinks that you could generate Yehud with Benoa Katan, then over there you're looking at it as being Gzeret HaKetuv of Zika, which is akin to Yivama, and maybe it works without necessary dot of the Baal, meaning the Katan, and maybe even without the acquiescence of the woman, like Yivama, which can be done about Korcha. So that's like one view of Yehud. Now, we flip to the other side of Yehud and saying that we even need the dot of the woman. It's not just you need a gadol to perform the Yehud, we also need the woman to be in an acquiescing party, and how much dot is a question. That will differ depending on the opinions here. If you say that Kesef Kiddushin is generated by the original purchase price, then you would require a much lower level of dot in terms of the woman's acquiescence. It's not what's generating the kiddushin. The kiddushin happened with the money that was given to the father, and the father can marry off his daughter, technically even without her dot. So if that's the case, then the kesef, the purchase price, generated the kiddushin. She wasn't a party that doesn't need to be a party to that. So therefore there's a gzeret hakatuv, ashelo yada, that you just inform her. And that's what it might be, simply just informing her. You don't need any acquiescence, you don't need any kiddushin in the sense of her acceptance, you just need to let her know you are switching now from an ama ivriya to a wife. And probably an important distinction, because the way that she acts would be different, meaning that there's one thing to be an ama ivriya, it's one thing to be a isha, to be the wife. And so there it's just a notification, I would call it, according to that daya. On the other hand, if you say that the girl is a party to the kiddushin, meaning that the forgiveness of the remainder of her servitude generates the consideration, over there you could see that the requirement for da'at might be a higher level. Asher ye'ada, the ye'ud now, is not simply notification. Ye'ud now is as quasi-kiddushin being created right now. And that kiddushin, by being created now, needs her to be a party to that kiddushin. And therefore, asher ye'ada means not simply notify her, but make her a party to this. She needs to know that this is what's generating the kiddushin, and possibly she could reject it. I mean, that opens up that possibility that she could say no, even though we don't see that here, but that does open the possibility. If she says she doesn't want it, then maybe she could reject it. Or does he have to at least placate her? Does he have to at least get her to agree to this? So that would be different views of what Ya'ada means over here. And again, the meaning of the word would be different then. Yehud really means to designate, but here, Yehud, you could read it as being Yehud, informative and notification, or you could read Yehud as the designation, but in the sense of a partnership. And therefore, you need the agreement of the parties to generate that partnership. So now, the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rav, Amar Rav Nachman. So here you have Amar Rav, Rav Nachman are going to come and draw conclusions from what Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says about Yehud, which is, Omer Adam lebito aktana, tzivi kiblei kiddushich. Go out and accept your money of Kiddushin on your own behalf. Meaning that the girl herself cannot generate Kiddushin. The father could generate Kiddushin by accepting monies of Kiddushin from another party. She's a Ktana. Since she's a Ktana, she cannot accept it on our behalf. But what we're allowing to happen here is that the daughter accepts Kesef Kiddushin on behalf of herself. The father agreed to a marriage to some party that is pursuing his minor daughter. And then when he agrees to the marriage, he says to the daughter, accept the money for your Kiddushin. So now he's made the daughter into a shliach to accept the money. Technically, she should not be able to be a shliach because she's a ktana that should fail. She's accepting the money because the father agreed to the marriage. And the monies that she accepts will marry her to this individual because she's accepting it on behalf of the father. So you would have think normally that should fail because ktana is not a girl who can act as a shliach. Nevertheless, it works. Why? Mid Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. So this was your question. Works from Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. Lav amar Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda ma'ot harishonot. Lav the kiddushin nitnu. The original monies were not the force of kiddushin over here. V'chi mishayir ba shavet pruta ve'kiddushe. And when she has a shavet pruta worth of work left, that's when you generate the kiddushin. Hachanami lo shna. So to over here, it doesn't matter. Or, in other words, what we are saying is, Ye'ud that is created during the time that she is working and in servitude to this individual happens sometime before the termination of her servitude. When that happens, it's not relying on the original money that was given to the father, because that the father was a party to. So that means that you're generating kiddushin now while she's a minor in the middle of her servitude. How could you do that? That's your question. She's a ktana. What it shows you is that the ktana can act as a shliach for her father. Because in essence, what's happening is that the Adon, when he purchased the woman, also purchased an option to marry her from the father. Which is that he gave him money to purchase an Amah Ivriya. And then he also, at that time, had the option now available to him that he could marry this woman who is an Amah Ivriya. He exercises the option later on. Sometime in the middle of her servitude, he decides he wants to marry her, and he exercises the option. Now, when he exercised the option, if he relied on the original payment and purchase price that was given to the father, that would be easy to understand. But here, it's not relying on that. It's relying on the forgiveness of the remainder of her work to create the consideration. But that consideration can't be given to her because she's a minor. So how does the Kiddushin create it? It must be that she's accepting it on behalf of her father. That's what's happening, that the father, by agreeing to the original option, said that his daughter could also be an extension of him. And by an extension of him, if she accepts the forgiveness of the remaining work as her kiddushin, she's in essence accepting the money or the kesef kiddushin on behalf of her father. So now what do? They extrapolate from that and say, okay, in a normal case of marriage, where the father marries off the daughter and now needs to receive the kesef kiddushin, he can have his daughter act as the shliach to accept the money on his behalf. Because you see here by Yehud, that's how it works. So it should work over here. And that's what their conclusion is. Amar Rav Nachman says that a minor can accept Kiddushin on behalf of her father. Just like in Yehud, that's what she's doing. She's accepting the Kiddushin by the forgiveness of the remainder of her work, but she herself can't be the counterparty to Kiddushin because she's a minor. It must be her father who is the counterparty. But if her father's the counterparty, how's the money reaching him? It's reaching him by reaching his daughter. And the fact that the father put that option in when he sold his Amah Ivriya means, in essence, he appointed her as a vehicle for acceptance of the Kesef Kiddushin during that period of Yehud. Right, so now you are asking a more fundamental question, which is, don't we have a principle, Ein Shlichut Ketan or Ketana, that they are not Bnei Deah and they cannot act as Shlichim? So why is it that over here they can act as Shlichim? Tosafot sharpens the question, and this is Tosafot Sheet that we've seen this a number of times, because Tosafot believes Shlichut is Mishum Zechia. That Shlichut, agency, works because of your ability to be Zocheh on behalf of another party. So then he says there's a complete failure over here. We know that Katan and Ktana do not have the ability to be Zocheh or to acquire something. They don't have power of Kinyan. Since they don't have a power of Kinyan, how does Shlichut work here at all? And that's your question. Which is, you have it, okay, very nice. You created something that works, though, right? And this is, it seems to be working this way, but is this just a basic failure of agency? How is she actually functioning as an agent? And so Tosfot asked that question, which is, Bim Tamar, Heyach hi mitkadesh be'omer la tzi'i v'kibli kiddusheich, halo katan, leit leizchiyam in a Torah. They don't have any ability to have Zchiyah. And again, this relies on Tosfot Shita, the agency is Mumshchum Zchiyah. Tosfot answers here, like he does in a number of other places, which is, V'yesh lomar b'dat acheret maknela yesh la Zchiyah midoraita. Tosfot says this in many other places, that the deficit of a katan or tana in Zchiyah or an agency, or any kinyan, is that they can't go pick up from Hefker. Sometimes that's Hefker and they go pick it up. They don't have the ability to generate a kinyan because there's a deficit in their dat or gemirat adat. So they can't create a kinyan. That deficit can be compensated for by another party. So when there's a transaction and someone is giving them something, then maybe over there they do have the ability to acquire a kinyan because the deficit in their kinyan themselves is made up for by the makneh, the one who is giving them or granting them the item. So that's what's called dat makneh. So that's, Tosafot brings that up with regards to, for instance, lulav. How come by the case of mitziah, they can't pick it up, they can't have a kinyan? In the case of lulav, you can give them a kinyan by which they could shake the lulav and use the lulav. Again, Tosafot over there answers in all these cases that it's dat acheret makneh la yesh zchiyah midoraita. Tosafot believes when there's another party involved granting them the kinyan, that makes up for the deficit in the katan's acquisition. That is Tosafot l'shitato. If you remember, back when we discussed this last time in Gittin with Tosafot, we brought down the Tzot HaChoshen, who says that lulei dat Tosafot, he would think that agency does not work because of zchiyah, but agency works mishum yad. That's the other way to formulate it, which is that agency is not an issue of kinyan and zchiyah, but rather, agency is simply yad. It's an extension of the party. My arm just got longer. Instead of it being formalized kinyan, where you can be zochen shel adam shelo b'fanav, and therefore you can be zochen on behalf of another party, that requires dat, that requires all of these features that don't work like katan and ktana, all you have to simply say, and this is what the Tzot HaChoshen suggests, which is that shlichut is mishum yad. It's not mishum zchiyah, it's not mishum kinyan, it's mishum yad. Yad means I can extend my arm. Just like maybe my chatzer is an extension of my arm, it doesn't require dat. It requires the party who sends them's dat, but it doesn't require dat for the object itself to acquire on your behalf. It's an extension of you. So too, the katan or ktana become an extension of you. Once you do that, the whole question falls away, and therefore, the fundamental question that Tosfot asks doesn't exist anymore because agency is not working because of zchiyah, it's working because of yad. And therefore, katan and ktana can be made into a yad. They can be shlichim. They may not be able to be zocheh. They may not be able to make kinyanim. And that's not stira. Because it's zchiyah. They don't have zchiyah midoraita. Yes, in ochanami. But shlichut is not mishum zchiyah. Shlichut is mishum yad. And therefore the two are not contradictory. And you can make them into a shliach. They can be your agents. They can be an extension of your arm. So those are the two ways to deal with your question of how is it here that a ktana is accepting on behalf of her father. Right now, v'amarav, v'amarav nachman. So again, the same amoraim here are extrapolating from this din of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, that hamikadesh b'milva sheyesh aleha mashkon mikudeshet. Someone who is getting married with a loan that has collateral associated with it, it works. Mida Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, because of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Lav amai Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda ma'ot harishonot. Lav the kiddushin nitnu. The original money is the purchase price. The amai v'ra, not what are functioning here as a kiddushin. Hai halvohi. In the end, what it is it's a loan. Vehi gufa mashkoni, and she herself is the collateral, which is that the adon, when he purchases the ama ivriya, he is buying an annuity. The annuity is the work she will do over the next period of time that she's in servitude to him. So he, in essence, lent money to the father, and the payback of that money comes through her production, through her work that she does over the next number of years for this adon. So he gives money up front, lends money, and he's paid back over a term through the work of this girl. So in essence, you have a halva'a, but there is also a mashkon over here. The mashkon is the ama ivriya. The girl herself is the mashkon because her goof is somewhat enslaved to him through this acquisition. And that makes her the mashkon, that he gets what he wants out of her. He gets paid back because she works for him. She's under his auspices. And therefore, he'll get the output of her ma'aseh yadayim, and that will pay him back the loan. B'chi, mishayir ba shaveh pruta, umiyayit. If she has a pruta left of work, and that is forgiven, and they do yehud, have a kiddushin, that great kiddushin. Well, how are the kiddushim created over here? You have a loan that is outstanding, meaning the repayment of the loan is what remains. There's an obligation from the Amavriyah to work for the remainder of time. That obligation is the remainder of the repayment of the loan. So he's forgiving the remainder of the loan and then returning the collateral. And so then it works to create kiddushin. What do you see here is, that's exactly what it'll work. If you forgive a loan that has collateral associated with it, it would work. Tosafot already questions, based on what we saw earlier in the Masechta, we discussed this when it says there, that you're allowed to be a Mekadosh B'milveh, that if you're a Mekadosh B'milveh, it doesn't work. Over there, Rashi made a statement, which was somewhat controversial, which is, what happens if you forgive the loan? Can you get married with forgiveness of a loan? And so Rashi says over there, of course, you can get married with the forgiveness alone because that generates consideration. And that hanor, that consideration, would definitely allow for a marriage to take place. Now, there were Rishonim that argued on Rashi's position back there that you can get married with the forgiveness alone because the forgiveness alone is not a davar mamashi. It's not something that is tangible now that you're getting married with. And therefore, they have the same problem here is why does the forgiveness of the loan change that? So some Rishonim say because of the Mashkon, it changes that dynamic, which is that normally a loan by itself and the forgiveness of a loan are not enough consideration. But a loan with a Mashkon makes it into a tangible item, and therefore the forgiveness of the loan is tangible here because of the Mashkon. And that's what the Mashkon adds in this case. Now for Tosafot, then Rashi, that's not meaningful because the forgiveness of the loan itself is enough consideration. They don't require a Mashkon. And therefore, you have to ask, what is the Mashkon doing over here? So Tosafot already raises that issue here. Why do I need a Mashkon, or what does it have to do with the Mashkon here? Simply, forgiveness of the loan should generate enough consideration to create the marriage. Therefore, Tosafot says, the Mashkon changes the dynamic of the situation, which is that you need Gemirat Adat, or you need some sort of consideration over here. That consideration is only significant enough if the woman believes she's getting the consideration, and that's what's going to end this or terminate whatever has gone on until now. And what Tosafot says is when you hold collateral, then the person does not believe the loan is forgiven until you hand the collateral back. I mean that the return of the collateral is really what tells the person that the loan is forgiven. If you forgive the loan and still hold the collateral, that shows or that maybe you really didn't forgive the loan, or the person doesn't feel like the loan's forgiven because you're still holding that collateral. Therefore, Tosafot says that collateral actually makes the situation worse, which is that forgiveness of the loan by itself, standalone, should have been enough consideration to generate kiddushin. But because there's collateral here, it will no longer do that. The forgiveness of the loan by itself is not sufficient grounds to create kiddushin. Because, v'yesh lamar, teheicha de'ika mashkon garua tfei. When there's collateral, it's a worse situation. Tesakadata lo samchadata. She will not be sumech dat. She will not have gemirat adat that the loan is forgiven and gives her consideration. Kevin sheino machzir la hamashkon, because you don't return the mashkon. Kamash malon milta the Rabbi Yosi de mikudeshet. What Rabbi Yosi teaches you is that you are married. Okay, so now that kamash malon says that you don't have to return the mashkon. Okay, then Tosfot says why? Because listen to this. He says Yoshomar the pshit alei the ein ikar yud b'chazrat mashkon. If the Yehud is not created by the return of the Mashkon here, Elamachmat Michilat Shibud Ha Milvelachud, the forgiveness alone, alone. Benirle the Dakdek, the Kasava Rabbi Yosi Bayud, the Eved Ivri, ain't Gufa Kanui. From what you have to learn from here is that an Eved Ivri, according to Rabbi Yosi Bayud, his Guf is not Kanui. Di Gufa Kanui, Mayin Zel Itzel Milvesh, Yeshale Mashkon, ain't Kan Milveklau. Ela, Mikaja, Baknat Gufa Leatzma. That's what says, if you believe that an Eved Ivri is kagufo kanui, like Rava says, then you don't need the loan or the forgiveness of the work. The simple return of her own auspices to herself would be sufficient grounds for her to marry. That would be consideration. But then Tosfot says you need a get shichrur, you would need something that indicates that he's freeing her in order to transition her to that freed state. So he says, if you believe gufa kanui, then it would definitely not be this situation. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yudu can't hold that because then simply her freedom would be enough to generate the consideration of kiddushin. The fact that he says that she's considered a mashkon shows you that gufo noin and kanoi. I'll just note that the Tosfot Ria Zakein on Rava's statement that says that Ebony Vri gufo kanoi says exactly that, that he's a mashkon. So that you could read it against what Tosfot says here, that if gufo kanoi means that the guf is a mashkon. Not literally in the sense of guf kanoi, but that means that it's a mashkon. And then you could reconcile the Gemaras. And that might be why the Tosfot Ari HaZaken back there said, what does Gufa Kanui mean? Mashgon. That's the way that we're defining it over here. And then that explanation of the Tosfot Ari HaZaken would follow with the remainder of the Rishonim. We explain here that the Kiddushin is generated by the return of the Mashgon. And that the forgiveness of the loan itself is not sufficient grounds to generate the consideration for the marriage because it's a Davar Shein Bo Mamash. It doesn't exist. It's just an obligation. It is not a Davar Shel Mamashut that is here. And therefore, how is the condition created over here? The forgiveness alone and the return of the Mashkon, which is exactly what is happening here by the Yehud, which is that the girl herself, the Amai Vriya, is a Mashkon to the Adon. And by forgiving the loan, he's returning the girl to her own auspices. And then in returning the girl to her own auspices, she now, through that consideration, through that hana'ah, gets married. That return of the Mashkon is what generates the Kiddushin. And that's how these cases are parallel. So then, Tosafot here is walking, what I call, a fine line. He says that forgiveness of a loan alone should have generated Kiddushin. The giving of a Mashkon, the returning of a Mashkon, is also sufficient grounds for generating Kiddushin, because you're returning an item, which, mid Rabbi Yitzchak, you own the Mashkon. If you return the Mashkon, then you generated Kiddushin. So, each one of those items independently should have generated Kiddushin. So now when I have both together, why am I in a worse situation? Which is, okay, I forgave the loan and I have a Mashkon here. So what Tosafot says is that's the Havamina. The Havamina is that when you forgive a loan and hold the Mashkon, that doesn't generate enough consideration because the person's skeptical of your forgiveness alone, because you're still holding the Mashkon. The Kamash Malan of Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is it works. That even though you're still holding the Mashkon, the forgiveness of the loan is sufficient grounds to generate the Kiddushin from this Yehud. Because over here where the Amai Vriya is still here with him, she's still a Mashkon, yet he forgives the loan, and that generates enough consideration for her to get married. And so Tosfot says, that's the Kamash Malan. That's what we learn from Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. And he says, it's obvious that we're talking about a Mashkon that was taken out at the time of the loan. Because a Mashkon that's taken out later is subject to the rule of Rabbi Yitzchak, which means that the creditor owns the Mashkon, and certainly there you could generate Kiddushin by giving over. But even if the Mashkon was given at the time of the loan, which means that it doesn't have that status where you own it, but rather it's considered to be partial repayment of the loan, that's the type of Mashkon that we're speaking about here. And even with that Mashkon, if you're still holding it, even when you forgive the loan, you generate enough consideration for marriage. And that's what Rav Amar Rav Nachman are saying we learn from Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Yehuda. So, Achinami Loshna, that if you're Mekadesh b'milveh b'mashkon, that works. I mean, that a milveh that has a mashkon on it, just the forgiveness of the loan by itself, even though you haven't returned the mashkon yet, that's enough consideration to generate marriage. All right, Tan Rabbanan. Ketzad mitzvat Yehud. How does Yehud work? I mean that we know how Kiddushin works. We discussed that earlier in the Masechta. Ariat Mikudeshet Li, Ariat Miureset Li. We have certain languages that work, and you have to have a giving of consideration of a pruta. Yehud, how does it work here? Does he have to say anything to her to generate the Yehud, or what is the terminology he needs to use in order to generate the Yehud? Omer La Bifnei Shnaim. He says before two witnesses, Ariat Mikudeshet Li, Ariat Miureset Li. Though, if you look in the Bach over here, he says that there was a girsa hareat miyuedet li, so that there was another lashon that wasn't simply the language of kiddushin, but a language that was particular to Yehud over here. Afilu besof sheish, even at the end of her 6 years. Afilu samuch l'shkriyat hachama, even a second before sunset on the last day of her work, he can do that. Benoeg ba minag yishut. Now he has to change the nature of the relationship between them, which is he has to now treat her or act with her like a wife and not like a shifcha. So he has to do something that indicates that the relationship has switched now, which is that he treats her as a wife and not as a shifcha. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer, this is the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda that we've been discussing all along, says, if there's enough time left in the day, in order to say she has value of a pruta, then it works. Vimav, ena mikudeshet. Otherwise, she's not married. Basically, their machloket seems to revolve around how is the kiddushin created over here. The Tanakama, or the Chachamim, seem to indicate that it's created by the original monies that were given by the adon to the father. Therefore, it doesn't matter how late in the process it is, because it's retroactive to the original monies. So even at the last second, if he generates Kiddushin, he doesn't need sufficient money left in her work because the monies that created the Kiddushin were already larger than a pruta, and that was at the time that he paid him. So it can be done at any time. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yudo generates Kiddushin through forgiveness of the remainder of her work, says you need a Shaveh Pruta left in order to generate enough consideration to create the marriage over here. And we still saw Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak who disagrees and says that's Gzeret HaKatuv. That that's not because he really believes that the forgiveness is what generates it. Simply Gzeret HaKatuv Ev Asher Lo Yada Behev Da. So those are two ways to read Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. But I'm saying in the Pashtut, the Machloket here is about how the Kiddushin is created. Is it created by the original monies or by the forgiveness of the remainder of the work? So now the Gemara says Mashal. This is similar to this, which is the Omer Leisha. Person says to a woman, Hidkachi li me'achshav la'achar 30 yom. I want you to be married to me from now in 30 days. Which means that the Kiddushin will be triggered in 30 days, but they are effective immediately. So when the 30 days elapse, then retroactively the Kiddushin was effective immediately. U'ba'acher v'kidsha b'toch 30 yom. Another party comes along and marries her in the interim period. Shemekudesh l'rishon. She's married to the first guy, and she's obviously not married to the second guy because the Kiddushin retroactively make it that the first guy was married to her immediately. Even though it took 30 days for it to go into effect, the effective date was Miachshav, the time that he gave her the money. So after the 30 days elapse, retroactively the guy, or the first guy is married to her, the second guy's Kiddushin is meaningless. Mashal Leman. This Mashal, is this describing the position of the Chachamim? Or is this describing the position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda? Ilema mashal the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. If it's Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, ha im yeshavu bayom kdei lasot imei shaveh pruta mekudeshet v'im lav lo. He says you need sufficient consideration left in the day in order to marry. So what are you talking about? Retroactive. We're talking about now. That's the consideration is now. Now again, this is the simplest reading of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, not like Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. According to Rav Nachman, it's also retroactive for Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. It's just gzeret haketuv that you have to have a pruta left. But the simple reading, which is that the Kiddushin is happening now with the forgiveness of the remaining work, that means that you did not have Kiddushin retroactively, you only had Kiddushin now. So Amar Rav Acha Brei de Rav Rava, Mashal de Rabbonon. The Mashal is for the Rabbonon, who say that the Kesef, that of purchase price, is the Kesef Kiddushin. That means that the marriage is retroactive. The Gemara says Pshita. Of course that's the case. That's why they say you can do it at the last minute, because you don't need any consideration. The consideration was given at the purchase price, which means it's all retroactive. So then, why do you need a mashal to tell me that? Ma'u detema, what would I have thought? Ha lo amar le me'achshav. He didn't say me'achshav. Kamash malon, that doesn't matter. So here you have a major machlok between Rashi and Tosafot, how to read this. So Rashi reads over here, Ma'u detema, ha lo amar le me'achshav. Rashi says, la'av. Hayadon never said to the av, me'achshav. When he gave the money of the purchase price, he never said, here is the money for the purchase, and if I marry her, me'achshav, this money will be the Kiddushin. He never made such a statement. B'telef minei. Let us extrapolate from this case of Yehud, da'filu lo perish me'achshav, that the default status in the giving of Kesef Kiddushin is me'achshav. You would see that from Yehud. From Yehud, when the Adon gives the father the money, says nothing, later on he decides he wants to marry the girl, we say it's equivalent of, retroactively, we go back to the original money, we say it's as if he said me'achshav. So then, what are you going to say? Even when you don't say me'achshav, it's as if you said me'achshav. So if a guy goes and says to a woman, hariyat nekadesh libi shloshim yom, we're married in 30 days, it's as if he said me'achshav, that we're married now, when the 30 days elapse. Even though he never said the word me'achshav. That's the way Rashi reads it. It's an extrapolation from Yehud, to teach us about the regular din of Kiddushin. The Kamash Malan is, no. The Mashal comes to teach you that if you say Me'achshav by alone, it works. If you don't say Me'achshav, it doesn't work. Even though Yehud doesn't require the word Me'achshav, maybe it's built in, maybe it's implicit because of the ability of the him to perform Yehud. And that's why you don't need to say Me'achshav, but you can't extrapolate that from that to alone. That's the way Rashi learns. Tosafot does not like Rashi's pshat, because he says, then the mashal here is different than the mashal everywhere else in Shas, which is Akasha. The Kule Gemara, ha-mashal ba l'lameid al davar. The mashal is coming to teach you about the item, not about itself. Over here, the way Rashi has it is, the mashal is teaching you something about itself. It's not teaching you about Yehud, it's teaching you about regular Kiddushin, and telling you that regular Kiddushin, you need to say me'achshav. That means that the mashal is not giving us any more information about Yehud, It's giving us information about regular Kiddushin. That's backwards. Normally, the Mashal would give you information about Yehud. And therefore, he reads it differently. Kamo Mashal l'madavar domer. Vod, Eich ne'amar mi'yud ne'umod b'isha sh'day mikudesh l'rishon. Halo ayri rabbanan klal, k'shabacher v'kidesh v'tochim e'michira. Number two is, the whole case by Yehud is totally different than the case that you're bringing in the Mashal. In the case of the Mashal, you're saying another guy came and offered her a Kiddushin in the interim. By Yehud, we don't have anybody else offering her a Kiddushin in the interim. The kach perishri, shamashal balulamed, velomar. The Mashal is coming to teach about Yehud and teach you this. Tihechi di poshit lan hotam, bomer li shara, hariyat mekudesh li miachshav, ulachar shloshim yom. Uva vikidsha acher betok shloshim yom, shimekudesh li mishom. Just like it's obvious to us, when he offers her a Kiddushin and says it's effective now in 30 days, that retroactively it's effective and the second guy's Kiddushin is meaningless. Huadin gabi Yehud, shimbacher v'kidsha. If in the interim period the father accepted Kiddushin from another party, and then the Adon at the end of the term decides he wants to marry her, the second Kiddushin are meaningless. Because when he decides to perform Yehud with her, retroactively, it goes back to the original kesef of purchase price. And so what it's saying here, that's what the Mashal is teaching you. You would have thought, since the Adon never says Me'achshav, when he decides later on to create Yehud, that Yehud happens now. The effective date of the Yehud is now. And even though you're using the kesef for the purchase price, it only goes effective now. The equivalent to, we'll see in the next case, where you offer Kiddushin and say they're only effective in 30 days from now. So you would work the same way, that when you have the Yehud, that's when it goes effective. Along comes the Mashal to teach you that's not the case. The Rabbanim believe that when you determine you want to do Yehud, retroactively goes back to the kesef of the purchase price. And therefore it's equivalent to the case of saying Me'achshav u'mishloshim yom. And therefore the father accepted Kiddushin in the interim, the second Kiddushin are meaningless because the Adon's Kiddushin started from the day that he purchased her. And that's what the Mashal is teaching you. So you have Rashi and Tosafot here giving you totally different views of this. And the Kamash Malon then is, to came and to call Mechiram and not the Yayid, command Amar Lame'achshav dami. That's the answer, which is what it just explained, that since part and parcel of buying an Amai Briah is the option to marry her, it's the equivalent of saying Me'achshav, because it's embedded in the purchase. And since it's embedded and known at that time of the purchase, it's as if you're saying Me'achshav. Now, Tani Yidach, we have another brayta. Mecheret bito, v'alach v'kidsha l'acher. So if the individual sold his daughter as an Amai Briah, and then he goes and marries her off to a second guy, Sichek ba'adon, u'mikudesha d'sheni. He's playing games with the Adon, and she is now married to the second guy. Divrei Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda believes that Yehud only works prospectively, not retroactively. Since it only works prospectively, if the father marries her off to someone else in the interim, he's basically terminated that relationship with the Adon. The Chachamim say no. He can exercise his right because it works retroactively, and he can trump the father's Kiddushin because his Kiddushin preceded the father's Kiddushin because it goes back to the original purchase price. It's the exact same thing what we said before, just in a different format. Mashal. Now again here, right, brings a Mashal. Omer Lisha. Aret mikudesh li lachar shloshim yom. We'll be married in 30 days. Ubacher v'kidsha b'toch shloshim yom. Someone else comes and marries her in that interim period. Shemekudesha the sheni, that she's married to the second guy, because the first guy who offered her Kiddushin did not say Me'achshav, not that it's effective immediately in 30 days, he basically made the effective date in 30 days. And by doing that, someone else can come in the interim and be Mekadesher, and that would knock out his ability to be Mekadesher. Because once the other Kiddushin go into effect before him, his Kiddushin in 30 days cannot take effect, and it will fail. And so therefore, she's married to the second guy and not the first guy. Okay, Mashal Laman, the Gemara asks again, who is this parable for? Ilem el Rabbonon. If you say the Rabbonon, the Amrei Rabbonon, im etzali yaid mi yaid. That doesn't fit the position of the Rabbonon. The Rabbonon say over here that it works retroactively, it's effective. So it's being a Mashal where it says that it doesn't work retroactively, it only works prospectively, it's not a good Mashal for them. Ela Amar Avacha Brei the Rabba, Mashal the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. It's Mashal for Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says the same thing again, Pshita. Yes, the Mashal is identical to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's position, which is, you have prospective Kiddushin or prospective Yehud, so why do I need the Mashal at all? What is the Mashal adding? Mar again says, Ma'udatema. I would think now, Ha lo amar la la achar shloshim yom. He never stated specifically to her that it was after 30 days. Kamash Malan. So Rashi again says here, Ma'adu Teima, Halo Amar La Avishat Matan Ma'ot. Time he gave you money, Amanachi Te'edli La'char Zman. At the time that he gave the money, he never says that the Yehu would happen later on. Ushumachem Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Mekadesh Adashini. And that's why Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says that Shmekadeshini. Aval Hecha Damar Hidkachi Li La'char Shloshim Yom. But maybe in a case where he says, marry me after 30 days, Afka Delo Ma'achshav Chayle. Even though you don't say Me'achshav, it would work. So once again, Rashi is learning from Yehud to the case of Kiddushin. Same problem Tosfos going to have with him again, which is, he seems to be using the Mashal backwards. What Rashi is saying is, that by Yehud, what do you see? By Yehud, you see that it fails, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and the Kiddushin from the second guy trumps the Adon. Why? Because he never said anything. When he purchased the Yama Ivriya, he simply paid money. He never said anything about Kiddushin, he never said anything about Kiddushin in the future. When he decides to do Yehud, that's after the fact. That's after the other guy already presented Kiddushin. That's why it fails. Implying that had he made the statement up front and said, look, you know, in 30 days we'll get married, maybe that would be sufficient. Why? Because we implicit in his statement of Achar Shloshim Yom really is Me'achshav. It works from now in 30 days because he's already stipulating it now for 30 days from now. In the case of Yehud, you don't have that statement and that's why it failed. But in a case of regular Kiddushin, maybe it would work. Kamash Malon is the Mashal tells you it doesn't work. Unless you stay Me'achshav explicitly, it's not implicit in any dealings. So that's the way Rashi learns it again, that you would have thought from Yehud to regular Kiddushin that regular Kiddushin would not require Me'achshav. Kamash Malon is that you do require Me'achshav. If you don't, then it's a prospective Kiddushin and not a retroactive Kiddushin. Tosafot, for the same reasons, rejects Rashi again. It says, Gamze Perish Lo Nehira, says Rashi's interpretation is also incorrect. Perish Rabbeinu Yitzhak, Ma'u Detema. This was the Havamina. Ha Lo Amar Lo Lachar Shloshim Yom. In the case of Yehud, it's a better situation. He never said, I'll get married to you in 30 days. As opposed to the case of Kiddushin, where it says, I'm going to marry you in 30 days, then he effectively postponed the effectiveness of the Kiddushin. By saying, in 30 days we'll get married, he is pushing it out. By the case of Yehud, he never said anything. By not saying anything, he didn't necessarily push out the effectiveness. And you might have thought that it's effective or retroactively effective because he never made, put out a language that postponed the effective date. And since he never stated anything to the contrary, maybe we should think that the purchase price acts as the case of Kiddushin. And the Kamash Malon is, Kevin Delo Mar Me'achshav, Behedja Mikudesha Lusheni. That the Mashal comes to teach you that only when you explicitly state Me'achshav is that make it effective immediately. When you say Achar Shloshim Yom, it is a postponement of the effective date, but it's not because you said Achar Shloshim Yom. It's because you failed to say Me'achshav. And so too by Yehud, that you don't say Me'achshav. And so you have the same failure. And that's why the second guy's Kiddushin works both by Yehud and over here is because you don't have the word Achshav used over here. And that's the way Tosafot learns the Ma'u Detema and the Kamash Malan. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Tanya Idach, we have a third braita. Umecheret bito, a person who sells his daughter as an Amah Ivra, upasak al manat shelo ya'ed. But he made a deal with the clause or a rider that says, you may not marry her. And you can't perform Yehud with her. I'm selling her to you as an Amah Ivra without the option to marry her. Nitzkayem atznai divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says it works. She's an Amah Ivriya, and he can't perform Yehud with her. It goes through. He can perform Yehud as he pleases, because this father, when he sold the daughter, made a condition that goes against the law of the Torah. The law of the Torah has specific rules about an Amah Ivriya, and now you change the rules. You can't do that. If you're going to make a girl into an Amah Ivriya, you got to play by the rules of the Torah. The rules of the Torah are there's an option to marry her. You can't take away that option because then you're going against the Torah. And anybody who creates a condition that goes against the Torah, that Tanai fails. And the reason we don't say the opposite, which is the Tanai is Kayam and the Maaseh is Batel, is for the same reasons that we spoke about when we spoke about the Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvain. Either this is not like Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvain, or you can argue when he makes the Tanai that is meaningless, that it's as if he's saying meaningless items and therefore doesn't affect, or the way that we expressed it when we spoke about Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvain was, The ma'aseh, the action is koveya. It's a chidush to say that your words or your tnai can then somehow postpone the effectiveness of the ma'aseh or hold it in abeyance. And since that is the chidush, then when the tnai is not a tnai that is kayam, then the ma'aseh stands. The action is the action. The tnai is trying to undo or put conditions on a ma'aseh. That tnai can only work if the tnai is done properly. But otherwise, actions speak louder than words. And therefore, the actions will be koveya. Now the Gemara asks, Ula Rabbi Meir, it's no kayam? Even according to Rabbi Meir, the condition should work over here? Va'atanya, don't we have a braita? This braita is important because this is a sugya or a machloket here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir about this principle, which is, Ha'omer li shahare at mikudesh li, amenach en lach alai she'er ksut vona, harizek mikudeshet, utna'o batel divei Rabbi Meir. Person who offers kiddushin to a woman, but he says, I'd like to marry you, but I don't want the obligations that the Torah places upon me, which are she'er ksut vona. So he says, listen, we're going to get married on condition that I don't have those obligations. Rabbi Meir says, utna'o batel. That tnai doesn't work because, obviously, he is matneh amashukatu batarai. He's trying to generate kiddushin, which is an institution min haTorah that comes with obligations. And now you're trying to create the institution without the obligations. Doesn't work. You can't be matneh amashukatu batarai. So that's a stira in Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir now is saying by the case of Amma Ivriah that you can make such a stipulation. By marriage, he's saying you cannot make such a stipulation. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'davar shebamon tano kayam. In monetary matters, the condition stands. But, obviously, what that means is that be makom isur, it does not stand. So what Rabbi Yehuda's position is easy to understand, which is that the Torah gives you two types of laws. It gives you certain prescriptive laws with regards to isur and heter, and there they are binding, because the isur and the heter are generated by the Torah. They're not intuitive items. They're not items that you get to decide about. They are simply the Torah's laws. And therefore, if you're going to use the institutions, the mechanisms of the Torah, you have to follow the prescription of the Torah. And you can't make conditions that undermine that or change that. On the other hand, the Torah also gives you relationships that have monetary sides to them or certain monetary aspects. That, what Rabbi Yehuda says is yes, the Torah says in default situations, this is the relationship. But if you want to create a relationship that is otherwise, go ahead, because these are monetary relations. So for instance, if you have a shomer sachar, who says, listen, the guy comes in and says, I'm going to pay you to watch this. The guy says, listen, min haTorah, I'm chayav in gneiva and aveda. I will only accept this if I'm not chayav in gneiva and aveda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not a problem, because you just created something that's not a shomer sachar anymore. You're not working under the auspices of Shomer Sechar of the Torah. You created your own monetary relationship, which you can do. You're free to create partnerships in any way you like. It's if you don't stipulate it, then you're governed by the Torah's description of the relationship. But if you so choose, you can create a different monetary relationship. So that's the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Meir, it seems that you can't make a tnai on Mashakatub Torah, period. So now, how do you reconcile this between Rabbi Meir's Shita here and Rabbi Shir's Shita by Amma Ivriah? Now, the Gemara could have asked on Rabbi Yehuda's Shita as well. How come you don't ask? Rabbi Yehuda over here says, Tanao Kayam. And over there, the Chachamim say that the Tanai is not Kayam. So that, Tosfot says, should be the same question. Tosfot says it's not a problem. Midrabanan, derabanan, lo kasha, deyud, lo evi davar shibamamun. Says a very easy answer. Yehud is a davar of Isur v'heter. So that'd be reviewed of the Shita Do. By Yisr V'Heter, Tanai doesn't work. By Mamon, monetary obligations, there you can make a Tanai. So what Rabbi Yehuda sees is, Sher, Ksut, Vona, or monetary obligations, therefore you can make a Tanai. Let's see with the exception of Ona. Ona probably is not a monetary obligation, that is a physical obligation to the woman's conjugal rights. But Sher and Ksut are seemingly monetary obligations, and that's why you can make such a condition. But for Rabbi Meir, who doesn't have any qualification of the statement, he says here by Kedushin, no go. And by Amma Ivriah, he says, no problem. Why is that? So Gemara says, Amar Chizkia, Shani Hocha. By Amma Ivriah is an exception to the case, exception to the rule, Damakra le'ama. It says over there that you can sell her as an ama, which is, V'chim kor ish et bito le'ama. If a person sells his daughter as a amai vriya, pe'amim she'enu mochra el alama bilvad. Sometimes you only sell her as a shivcha amai vriya. So what you see from here is that Rabbi Meir believes there's an institution of amai vriya mina Torah that exists without yehud. Therefore, you're not being matneh mashakadu b'Torah. The Torah has such an institution, and that's why it works over here. Rabbanan hayla ama may avdile. What do the Rabbanan do with this ama? What do they learn out of it? We need it for this braita. Le ama mlameid shemochra lepsulim. That teaches you can sell her to psulim, meaning that you can sell her to people she cannot marry. Velo dinu im mikadsha lepsulim lo yimkarena lepsulim. If he can marry her off with kiddushin to someone who technically she cannot be married to, certainly he should be able to sell her to someone like that. Ma the mekadesh the psulim kshken adam mekadesh bito kshin ne'ara. Well, maybe the ability to create kiddushin by the father is much more powerful. Well, how do I know it's more powerful? Because the father still has rights to create kiddushin for his daughter when she's already of age, when she's a ne'ara. Father loses the right to sell his daughter as an amah ivra as soon as she becomes of age. Because the Kal Vachomer is that if she, when she's enslaved or in servitude, goes free when she reaches of age or simanim or puberty, certainly when she's already of age, he can't sell her into being an amah ivra. What this would indicate here is that you have a Kal Vachomer, which says kiddushin, the father can marry her off to psulim, which is that kiddushin or tofsin or chayvei lavin and certain restricted marriages, and yet he can accept the kiddushin, and therefore we're going to say the same thing. Why can't he sell his daughter as an amah ivriya? Gemara says the Kal Vachomer fails because kiddushin is a much more powerful vehicle, so powerful that the father still has rights in his daughter after she's already of age and when she's already a nara. So then you can't extrapolate from that to the din of amah ivriya, where his rights terminate at the time that she comes of age, when she reaches the age of puberty. Talmud Lomar, so that's what the puzzle comes to teach you. Lama melamei shemochra lepsulim. That's the heter to sell her off to psulim. Just like you can be mekadesh her lepsulim, you can sell her off to psulim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, im lamei shemochra lepsulim, havarei kvar ne'emar. Wait a minute. If that's what that word's coming to teach you, that's already found somewhere else in the parshia of Amar Vriya, which is imra'a be'enei adonah. What does it mean that she is not pleasing in the eyes of her master? He says, Shira'a binisueha. That's what the Ra'a is over here. How come he can't marry her? Because there's a problem. Ra'a. There's some bad connection over here. The bad connection is that they can't get married. He is pasul to marry her. That's why he can't get married. So he says, that's already written there. Ma tamalorma le'ama, mlamei shemochra likrovim. He can sell her to relatives. Because relatives are also psulim. Someone who can't marry her. But the relatives are even more problematic because the other psulim are only pasul miyisr lav. That means a kedushin or tofsin, just that it's a illegal marriage. Over here by relatives, those are arayot where the kedushin are not even tofes. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar says you have two limudim. Imra abeinei odoneh tells you he can sell her as an amah ivriya to people who are not able to marry her even though they can create kedushin with her. Le'ama teaches you he can even sellers an amah ivriya to relatives who cannot marry or have kiddushin with her whatsoever. V'alo dinu, it's a Kal Vachomer. Im mochra lepsulim, lo yimkarena lekrovim. If you can sell her to psulim, then obviously you should be able to sell her to krovim. Mala mochra lepsulim, shimratza leyayed, mi yayed. Wait a minute. By psulim, when, if he chooses to do yayud, he could. Yimkarena lekrovim, shimratza leyayed, enu mi yayed. So there isn't a Kal Vachomer. Just because he can sell her to psulim doesn't mean automatically he can sell her to kovim, because by the psulim, at least they can perform yehud. They may not be able to consummate the marriage because it's an illegal marriage, but kiddushin or tofsin, so the yehud can go through. By kovim, the yehud won't even go through. So there's no Kal Vachomer. So I'm a kral, the ama. The ama comes to teach you, melamei shemochra lekrovim, that you're allowed to sell her to relatives. V'Rabbi Meir. Where's Rabbi Meir, who doesn't use the word le'ama to teach you that you can have an amah ivriya even when there's no institution of yehud with a condition that says no yehud? The psulim nafkalei meichad and nafkalei the Rabbi Elazar. He'll learn out that you can marry off the psulim from imra'a beinei adoneha. Bikrovim savar la kerabbanan. On the other hand, the bikrovim, he holds like the rabbanu who say that you cannot have an amah ivriya sold to krovim. That's a machlok between Rabbi Elazar and the chachamim. Rabbi Elazar says, imra'a beinei adoneha teaches you can sell her to psulim. And Le'amah teaches you can sell her to Krovim. Chamim don't learn Imra Abe Enei Adonai. They don't have that limud. And they learn Le'amah to teach you can sell her to Psulim. They have nothing to tell you Krovim. And therefore they say you cannot sell her to Krovim. Rabbi Meir basically plays with both shitot. He has Le'amah teaching you that there's an institution of Ma'aviyah without Yehud. And that's why the condition works. But then, what does he do about the limud that you can sell her to Psulim? That he learns out of Imra Abe Enei Adonai. He uses the limud of Rabbi Lezer, not to teach you about Psulim, just like Rabbi Lezer. But then he still doesn't have Le'amah available, so he'll be like the Rabbanan and say that Krovim cannot be the purchasers of the Amriya Ivriya. Tani Chada, Mukhra, Le'aviv, Ein Mukhra, Livno. But Ron Breitas says that you can sell her as an Amriya Ivriya to the father, but not to his son. Tani Idach, Ein Mukhra, Lo Le'aviv, Lo Livno. Over here, Ein Mukhra, not to the father and not to the son. Bishlama ain't a mochra lo laviv lo livno. The one who says you can't sell it to the father or the son, kirabonon. That is like the rabban who say you can't sell it to relatives at all. El mochra laviv ain't mochra livno. They can sell it to the father and not to the child. Kiman, who's that like? Lo kirabonon who say you can't sell it to relatives at all. Velo kirabi lezer says you can sell it to all relatives. What's the difference between a father and a son? Where it says olam kirabonon. Moda rabbanon echad yichad sad yehud. There's a difference between the father and the son. In the case of his father, when he sells it to his father, the father cannot marry this Amah Ivriya because it's his granddaughter. On the other hand, the father's son, who is his brother, could marry her. He's her uncle. An uncle is allowed to marry it. So if we said in the Pasha of Amah Ivriya, he has the right to be miyayed, the girl himself, or be miyayed to his son. So what the Rabbanan say is Krovim are only precluded when there's no ability to perform Yehud at all. But if you have a possibility of performing Yehud, even though it's not with the master, but with the master's son, we might let it go through. That's one brighter that takes that position with regards to the Rabbanan. Krovim are only problematic when they are absolutely not able to perform Yehud, not the father and the son. But in a case where it can't be the father, but it can be the son, we would let it go through. And that's by the father. You start with the father. The father, who's the grandfather, cannot perform Yehud, but the son of that father, meaning his brother, the uncle of this girl, could perform Yehud, and therefore the father could have Yehud, create the Yehud with his son. So then if he sells it to his son, it doesn't matter now the son can't give it to his son, because it just becomes a one generation later. Meaning that if he sells it to his son, that's his sister. And if the son wants to give it to his son, it's his aunt. So either way, it's going to be an illegal marriage, and therefore there's no Yehud at all. And therefore that will explain that brayta that says you can't sell to the father, but you cannot sell to the son. And that would be the machloket here between these brightot is to the position of the chachamim. When the chachamim say you can't marry off to krovim, does that mean period? And that's the one that says you can't marry off to the father and the son. Or does that mean if there's no manifestation of yehud? But if there is some manifestation of yehud, then it would be okay. And that's the brightot that says to sell to the father is okay, to sell to the son is not okay. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.